In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. It's all about choices, isn't it? Today's first reading from Deuteronomy tells of Moses laying out choices for his people. It's simple, just two choices. Life and prosperity, sounds good. Or death and adversity, which refers to the absence of the divine presence. These are big and very broad choices, and so the obvious choice may be, well, obvious. But it's really not that simple, because within each of these broad choices is a lifetime of little choices, daily choices, tedious choices, unpleasant choices. Moses tells the people, if they make the good choice, Israel will prosper. Bad choice, and Israel is doomed. Presented this way, one could argue he's clearly lobbying and stacking the deck. Choose covenant with God and live well. Reject covenant with God, you get death. Choose covenant, receive blessings. Reject covenant, you're cursed. Presented this graphically, the choices are limited, and yes, the choice does seem obvious. We're not typically presented with life and death choices. If we take this literally, and true life and death choices can be pretty clear. And it's probably a fairly safe assumption to say we've all chosen life and covenant with God just because, well, we're all here, right? It's a big, broad choice and a most important one. But it's the little, let's call them micro choices, we make all the time that land us in a place of covenant or lack of covenant with God. Micro choices to bow down to other gods, to put too much weight on insignificant things. We devote time and energy to things that don't really matter. Life and death micro choices are presented to us each day. We choose death when we disregard what we know in our hearts is the right path. This death we choose is a subtle and almost imperceptible process, as all the micro choices seem inconsequential while they're happening. Each one viewed in a vacuum will seem to be minor. But what happens when we take stock and add up all those little things? Well, here's a very simplistic example. When we have a day, and we will, when we're mean to people when kindness would work well, when we're not compassionate, when compassion would be the thing to be, when we do or say things that step on others, when we may have had restraint. Well, we may have had some awareness of what we're doing, and maybe we're thinking, okay, I shouldn't have said or shouldn't have done that. And we've had that thought, but then we move on. But at the end of the day, if we put it all together, if we add it all up, well, we've just had kind of an ungodly and hateful day, haven't we? Does that sound too preachy? I hope so, because I'm preaching to me too. Today, I set before you life and death, blessings and curses. What to do? In our New Testament reading today from Matthew's Gospel, Jesus takes a fairly hard line with the laws. This follows is actually a continuation of his Sermon on the Mount, where we hear beautiful and comforting beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the meek, those who mourn. But his tone changes here, and it can be uncomfortable to hear. Why do you want to get all harsh with us, Jesus? Jesus addresses these things: murder, adultery, divorce, false swearing, which is basically lying. I'll make a guess about all of us. I'm guessing we may not have anyone here who has purposely murdered someone or has ever seriously thought about actual murder. If I asked for a show of hands, for a show of hands, I most likely would not see any, right? So this murder category isn't something we need to be too concerned about. When we hear thou shalt not murder, we're probably thinking, yeah, I've got that one, no worries. However, if I ask for a show of hands for any adultery, divorce, or false swearing, I imagine there would be a sea of hands, and yes, mine would be up as well, but I'm not saying for what. Jesus takes these things down to a more practical level, a more personal and relatable level, and so a careful read of this text actually does give me more concerned about the murder thing. Jesus cites the law, you shall not murder, which at face value doesn't concern me, but he refines that to what I'll call a murder of relationship, a murder of relationship with God and with others. He says we should not be angry with a brother or sister, and brother or sister means anyone, or insult them, or even call them fool. Okay, now I've got problems. He goes on to say, we should not even approach the altar, but first be reconciled. Looking at all the things Jesus points out in this lesson, murder, adultery, divorce, false swearing, they all have a common denominator, broken relationship with others and with God. Broken relationship, killing of relationship. There's a brokenness behind all of these things, murder, adultery, divorce, false swearing. Maybe you can add some others, right? When any of these occur, just follow the brokenness and you'll find the source. During our service, we offer peace to one another. This custom evolved because of this very teaching in Matthew, go first to be reconciled and then approach the altar. We do this at a point in the service prior to both the clergy approaching the altar and then the gifts coming forward, and ultimately the congregation coming forward at a Eucharist to receive Holy Communion. Holy Communion, communion with one another and with God. That peace we pass is the time for us to set aside any negativity, anger, resentment, even hate that we have in our hearts for anyone in our lives, in our world, symbolically by offering that to one another here. This models what Jesus is saying in today's second reading from Matthew's Gospel, to put aside these things before approaching the altar. And perhaps when our hearts are hard, we can't quite get there. But the intention and desire to put them aside should be there, and the peace offering time is our reminder of that. I think we should try to do that during the peace, not to just greet those around us here, but to offer peace in our hearts to those in our lives with whom we're not at peace. And we may very well do this, put them aside, only to pick them up again once we leave here. But what could happen, if we can be intentional about it, is that each time we acknowledge that desire for reconciliation and we at least try, we chip away at it, and we keep chipping away at that anger and resentment and hate, whatever, until it's dissolved, until we choose life over death, not just as a general lifestyle choice, but more and more in those little daily micro choices. If you find you have difficulty praying or meditating or feeling a disconnect with God, take a look at your interactions, your disconnects with others, whether we know the individuals personally or not, and look towards reconciling that by seeing God in everyone as we're meant to do. That's why, that's how we must work to put our differences aside, to clear the way for relationship with God. So let's just flip back to Moses and the two big choices, life or death. The Ten Commandments first appear in the book of Exodus, and I guess that was just not enough, because in Deuteronomy, before today's reading, the Ten Commandments are repeated. And then throughout Deuteronomy, Moses pretty much reviews the entire Torah, the Jewish law. Moses could see the pattern. When the Israelites were living with God in their lives were good. When they turned away from God, not so good. For us, these two choices represent our intention, and we choose to live our lives in covenant with God. It's an easy choice to have that intention, but again, when it comes to practice, to those everyday micro choices, it can be very challenging. Perhaps Moses felt it was time for a review, a reality check, and a blunt reminder that sin is the absence of God. Sin is death. And we so easily, so thoughtlessly choose death. Likewise, Jesus, with all the teachings about love and forgiveness and all the comforting words, maybe he could see a pattern of his disciples following him and listening to his teachings and then going back to their lives and maybe not quite putting it all into practice. Perhaps Jesus, like Moses, felt it was time for a reality check. We have choices because we have free will, and our free will has given us many benefits and has also provided many pitfalls. Clearly, our micro choices in life at times impede our ability or willingness to live as true disciples of Christ. It's a pattern that can be difficult to break, and the difficulty lies in recognizing how our choices impede our relationship with God, put us out of sync with God. Now, here at our beautiful church, in this beautiful setting, with beautiful liturgy, we fortify our connection with God. We come here to be fed, to worship together, to be in community. But this, right now, is a really easy community to be in. And this worship service is a safe cocoon to get close to God and to fill and fortify our souls. We come here for sustenance. Now, I've said this before, and I'm sure I'll say it again. This is the easy part, and it should be. No matter how difficult it was for you to get up and get out and get here this morning, this is the easy part of keeping your covenant with God. This is your spiritual spa day. This is the easy part. But we've got to take the choice we made to be here today, which represents our choice to be in relationship with God, our choice of life. We have to take that with us when we leave. It's what goes on in our lives outside this building that matters most. It's outside this building where the world gets in our way, clouds our vision, takes control. And that's where the everyday micro choices come into play. That's where we can take control and make the choice of a life in relationship with God, or death of the Spirit. So let's all continue to choose, not just while we're here, but once we leave. It is, after all, life or death. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.